Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Is there anything more Chicago way than Alderman Ed Burke indicted on corruption charges and Ann Burke, his wife, elevated to the status of Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court? No. There is nothing more Chicago way than that. Yeah, I know. Illinois State Supreme Court, that's a state court. Burke's problems are in federal court, where so many other aldermen will find themselves, perhaps including Danny Solis, who loved the happy endings and the massage parlors and those Asian women, as he said, on federal tape. But I think there's nothing more aggravating to people than the Burke power couple family. And it's almost like you got slapped in the face and they slap you again and again. It reminds me of that scene in House of Games. Love that movie. David Mamet, I believe, with Joe Mantegna, asking the psychologist if he may have another.
Beg me for your life.
Hey, f*** you. This is what you always wanted, you crooked bitch. You thief. You always need to get caught because you know you're bad. I never hurt anybody. I never shot anybody. You sought this out. This is what you always wanted. I knew it the first time you came in. You're worthless, you know it? You're a whore. You came back like a dog to its own vomit, you sick bitch! I'm not gonna give you sh**! Thank you, sir. May I have another?
There's other stuff in the news, obviously. Lori Lightfoot is kind of screwing up a little bit. She's poo-pooing a move by the Department of Education, Federal Department of Education, to come in and watch what's going on with sexual abuse in the Chicago public schools. Lori, I support you, but I'm just saying right now, bad advice from PR people, if you said, and I believe you said it, that you take what they're doing with a grain of salt because Trump. Those children are not political. And a school system that cannot, as the Chicago Tribune, my newspaper, revealed months ago, a school system that cannot protect the bodies of its students from sexual assault is a school system that's in trouble. That is a civil rights question. That is the civil rights issue. The more important civil rights issue, that's the immediate one, and a larger one, is that kids don't get an education, many in those schools, and are treated poorly. There's more to talk about. We're going to have Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics on. He's the co-founder and publisher of Real Clear, to talk about those presidential debates. On the Democratic side, with Joe Biden being so clean and articulate, and Jeff Carlin's here, and I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. And you know where you are? Between Ann and Ed Burke, and Joe Biden and his teeth and bloody eye, and Democrats now, I guess, grabbing for the guns. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So Tom Bevin, publisher and founder of Real Clear Politics, please don't tell me that Joe Biden was clean and articulate, because I know that he was clean and kind of semi-articulate.
Yeah, look, Biden was Biden. He was
sort of mediocre, and he stumbled and bumbled his way through it. He didn't fall flat on his face, but he didn't. He certainly didn't, you know, wow everybody. I mean, he is who he is, and the Democrats are going to have to figure out if they can live with that or not, right? I mean, the one thing that he did do last night with some authority was really sort of expand his centrist appeal, middle lane, you know, push back on Sanders and Warren over health care and, you know, how much it's going to cost. He pushed back on Kamala Harris on the Constitution, Second Amendment, you know, and he really stood with, wrapped himself around Barack Obama. There was an exchange with Julian Castro where Biden was like, listen, I'm, you know, 100% in with Obama. And it's basically now the sort of restoration of the Obama presidency is what Biden is pitching to voters. And we'll see if that's enough to get him through the primary or not.
One of the features of Real Clear Politics for columnists like me is I can stay up as long as I can. And I have to admit that I fell asleep sometime during the debate. But that was
I'm pretty sure you weren't the only one, John, who fell asleep during that debate.
It was Betty's roast peppers. But one thing that I do have to say, you wake up in the morning, go on Real Clear Politics, and you can read something like from Wegman and Crabtree from Real Clear Politics, 10 candidates, 10 strategies on display in Democratic debate. It was all written very cleanly, clearly, bingo, 1, 2, 3, you know, all the candidates, a few paragraphs for each. I just wanted to give you a hat tip as the publisher of, Real Clear.
Yeah, no. Phil and Susan did a very nice job wrapping the debate. But I can't let this go, John. I can't let you blame Betty's peppers for the Democrats' boringness in putting you to sleep.
You they were can't. Stuffed with ground beef and pine nuts.
I mean, 3 hours is too long. It's just too long. I mean, people aren't going to pay attention to that. And they really should have made it, you know, half that time, 90 minutes probably. And I'm sure the Democrats are excited to go from 10 candidates down to about 5 so everyone can get their time. Basically, you have the 3 front runners, the sort of top tier, and then you have all the rest. And certainly, I don't think anyone really distinguished themselves in any way that's going to change the dynamic of this race. I think Beto O'Rourke actually did something last night, which was absolutely preclude himself from getting out of this race and running for Senate in Texas, because I don't think you can stand up there and say, hell yeah, I'm going to take your AR-15 and then go run. In fact, everybody's already posted clips of him just last year trying to reassure voters of Texas that he was a good fit for that state. He's now gone completely in the opposite direction. And so, you know, for him, it's president or bust. I don't know what he's going to do after he, you know, fails to win the Democratic primary.
I own an AR-15. A lot of our listeners own AR-15s. Why should they not have one?
To be clear, they should have them. If you purchase that AR-15, if you own it, keep it. Continue to use it responsibly.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Isn't it consistent with the Democratic view that only a few years ago, Bill Clinton was saying assault weapon bans is politically a dumb idea? And now you have Democrats like Beto and others not pushing back when you say that they want to grab the guns of America and step on the Second Amendment.
No, and I think for a lot of conservatives, they were like, well, kudos to Beto for actually saying what Democrats really think and really want to do. And you didn't see anyone up on that stage push back. I mean, Amy Klobuchar said something like, well, I'd start with voluntary. The first step would be voluntary buybacks, sort of implying that if that didn't work, there would be another step that would be involuntary. And you also had, you know, Joe Biden trying to basically tell Kamala Harris that there is such a thing as a Constitution, a Bill of Rights, Second Amendment, because she was just like, you know, I'm going to do all this stuff by executive order. Clearly not under either not understanding or not caring or not wanting to let her supporters or Democratic voters in on the fact that, like, it's not going to happen. It doesn't work that way. So we'll see. If Joe Biden's the nominee, I think he's perfectly, you know, able to occupy a middle ground on guns and the Second Amendment. If it's someone else, yeah, it might be a little bit of a different story. I'm not sure that this is the Second Amendment is an animating issue for a lot of voters. It is for some voters. It's their primary issue, but
100 million of them.
Yeah. In parts of the South and West, I'm sure. Among the sort of moderates and independents in the states that are going to matter, how will voters react to that proposal. I think the other proposals, quite frankly, are more problematic. Taking away their health care and those kinds of issues are much more, you know, of a problem for the eventual Democratic nominee if that's the territory that they stake out.
Looking down the road now, days after the debate, I'm wondering if the media, meaning us, if we're not giving Bernie Sanders enough credit for authenticity. Authenticity is a big issue in the Democratic Party and anywhere for voters. At least you know where Bernie stands. Warren, it seems to be latching on to the fuzzy pink hat crowd and playing the gender card along with the I'm a kind of a capitalist, but I'll Phil Graham notwithstanding, I will grab your money. But it seems that Bernie has an odd authenticity that the others don't.
Well, I would phrase it differently. I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren is fairly authentic in the way that she communicates to people. I think Joe Biden's pretty authentic. I think Bernie is more ideologically pure in the sense that he says basically what he thinks and lays it out there for voters and says, yeah, you know what? Your taxes are going to go up. And to your point, Elizabeth Warren specifically dodged that direct question twice last night in the debate, doesn't want to talk about it. She wants to talk about how costs will go down, costs of health care and deductibles and premiums and whatnot. But she's not willing to actually say the truth. The middle class will have to pay more in taxes to have that program available to them. And so I think in that sense, Bernie is very, he's authentic and he's, you know, more truthful than the other candidates when it comes to that sort of thing. But look, I think Elizabeth Warren is authentic in the way that she connects with voters and represents herself and Joe Biden as well and some of the other candidates too. But certainly there are some. Kamala Harris, for example, doesn't strike me as very authentic. And she's run into a whole lot of trouble about, you know, trying to square her past record and the way that she talks about health care. She says one thing on a debate stage, and the next day she walks it back. She comes across as someone who's sort of willing to say and do whatever is necessary to get her where she wants to go. And in that sense, I think that's why she maybe hasn't done as well as and wasn't able to sustain that initial bump that she got out of that first debate because voters really looked at her and kind of came to that conclusion.
Well, she waffles and that's not a good thing. One thing I also notice from the media on these debates, the moderators, you know, the raise your hand thing was mocked a few debates ago, but at least that gets a response. Even Joe Biden's tepid, like, I want to order a Brandy Alexander at the wedding, but I don't want anyone to know it.
But, I want to vote for that auction item, but not really.
Right, yeah, kind of a bit. But the follow-ups, I mean, Stephanopoulos, I thought, where are the follow-up questions? Like, no, madam, or no, sir, you said A, and now you say B. Which is it? The debates seem to be, I don't know, campaign rallies rather than actual finding out where they stand.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, you know, because it is. There were follow-ups. David Muir asked a couple follow-ups on again to Elizabeth Warren on the taxes, and he couldn't get her to answer. And he asked twice, and then it's kind of like, well, I'm going to move on because she's clearly not going to answer that question. Cory Booker was asked repeatedly, name one. How are you going to get gun control done? You say you can do this. Name one Republican in the Senate that you could bring along that would subscribe to your proposal to license firearms owners. And he didn't answer the question. He was asked it again. He didn't answer it. And so they moved on. So, I mean, I do think, though, you saw Jorge Ramos, who is up there sort of purporting to be this journalist. I mean, he's an activist. I mean, he's clearly an activist. His presence as a moderator, I mean, they were in Houston and all that, but he shouldn't be up there as being sort of an objective journalist. I mean, I thought the other folks actually did a fairly decent job, given the constraints that they've got. We know we're not going to get tough questions to these folks, mostly from most of the media members. That's just not how they operate with Democrats on the stage. But it kind of is what it is.
Bottom line is this: Donald Trump in office on trade policy. You know, he reminds me of that guy in The Wizard of Oz. You know, when you pull back the curtain, it's a really small dude.
Okay. I'm not even going to take the bait, Senator Harris, but I am going to take this to Senator.
It wasn't about you.
I'm going to take this to Senator Sanders.
You have to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now I have to ask you, as a publisher and editor who puts columns up on Real Clear, and some are from the left, some are from the right, some are from the middle, and I, again, congratulate you on that. What is your advice to columnists who may employ satire and try and not do it in the vaudevillian whoopee cushion variety? Like, I don't want to be like Kamala Harris and talk about tiny little heads or whatever she was saying the other day behind the curtain. What do you, what advice do you give to someone who would say one day the Big Rock Candy Mountain could be the best economic policy platform for the Democrats, and then the next day he says Rahm should run and save Biden from his bloody eye?
Why you're asking for a friend?
Yes, for a friend. Would you have stopped that friend?
No, look, I do think, listen, I do think, you know, when we started this thing 20 years ago, and, you know, over the time, satire is not really our it's not our brand. It's not what we do. But we have run some satire pieces from time to time, and Carl Cannon's written a couple of them, and you know, when they're good. But it is hard. Satire in this day and age is really, really hard because people are so woke and triggered, and they take everything literally, and they you know, read a headline and don't read the piece, and so you find that it's exhausting to try and you know, write something that people will actually recognize as satire. And it, so my, yeah, my general, you know, suggestion to columnists is like, don't do it, because it's going to be more trouble than it's worth. And even these websites that are, you know, satirical sites, I mean, they get, you know, like the Babylon Bee and the Onion now. I mean, yeah, sometimes the people take the Onion headlines as actual headlines, and
can't tell you how many Facebook posts I've seen where someone posts something and like, can you believe this?
Yeah.
Really? Well, we just saw this situation last week with
Cass, you idiot.
Yeah. With this, you know, government employee who had written this Facebook post, which was clearly satirical, and you had one of the folks at Bloomberg Law dig it out and in a sort of gotcha thing, and like said he was anti-Semitic, he was making fun of anti-Semites, and you know, got fired and then reinstated. And it was clearly, if you read the post, I mean, he was clearly being satirical. But in this day and age, it really doesn't translate. And
I ran around on Twitter after that last one, where I wanted Rahm to run and save the Democrats from Joe Biden's bloody eye. And I kept retweeting. I retweeted it with a modest proposal. And people were like, so what if you're modest? So what?
Right. Like, oh, exactly.
God,
I mean,
just
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
Tom, real quick, I got to ask you this. I talked to Sean Spicer the other day, and he says, his theory, he thinks Sanders wins Iowa, wins New Hampshire, loses South Carolina, and then win Nevada. I want you to hear this.
I currently am a believer in Sanders, and I'll tell you why. I think that if you look at the primary calendar for the Democrats, it starts in Iowa. Sanders did very well there last time. For all intents and purposes, he actually won. His strength is organizing. Iowa is a caucus state. You got 99 counties where organizing is key. You got to get your people to your caucus sites. Sanders, that's his strength. I think he actually, despite what any poll says, because remember, it's a small state, so polling isn't necessarily a strong indicator, because it's all about whether or not you can get your supporters to go to those caucus sites, sit there for hours on end, go to the corners over and over again, and ultimately prevail. I actually think that's a huge advantage for Sanders. I think right now the advantage is his going into Iowa. Then I think he goes to New Hampshire, where he's a native son. Yesterday, a poll came out that showed him taking a huge leap forward over Joe Biden. I actually think if he's on pace right now, he wins both of the first two contests. He loses South Carolina. It's got a heavy African-American contingent. I think that Biden and Kamala Harris will actually do well there. But then it pivots down to Nevada, where it's a heavy union state. Again, it goes back to Sanders' strength in terms of organizing, because it's a caucus state, heavy unionized. And so I think that Sanders has a chance to pull off a win in the first three or four contests, which would propel him well going forward. However, if he stumbles, my guess is that right behind him is Elizabeth Warren. I don't think that Joe Biden, I think Joe Biden is a falling star, not a rising one.
What do you think of that?
Possible, certainly possible. I mean, I would actually think that maybe Elizabeth Warren has more of a chance of splitting one of those two or winning both of those two more than Sanders. But we'll see. But in that scenario, that's trouble for Joe Biden. I mean, if Joe Biden doesn't win Iowa or New Hampshire, it is going to be a long, I mean, Iowa's February 3rd, New Hampshire's February 11th, South Carolina is until the 29th of February. So just imagine what the media coverage is going to look like for Biden, you know, starting on February 3rd, if he doesn't win Iowa or come in like a close second, that he can be like, yeah, I'm fine, I'm on to New Hampshire. That is going to be a really, really rough ride for him. And that's the period of time when you could see some of these African-American voters who are his core, his firewall in South Carolina, could really fall away from him and go to migrate to another candidate. If, you know, Cory Booker has a surprise, you know, fifth place finish in Iowa, but he does, you know, 10 points better than expectations. Those are the kind of things that can really happen in a race that looks like it's not very fluid, but underneath the surface, I think is more fluid than people think. So, the Sanders thing is possible, but I think there might be other scenarios that are even more possible and more likely than that.
I'm just, now that you said it, I'm salivating over the idea of having T-Bone, Cory Booker's fictional friend, coming back into the picture. But in the meantime, we'll have to leave it there. Tom Bevin, co-founder, publisher of Real Clear Politics. You can see him everywhere on television. He's a pundit, too, and also a member of the Princeton, I believe, Princeton Hall of Fame Football Club, right? Aren't you
Not a member of the Princeton Hall of Fame in football.
I thought you were player of the year 1 year.
No, that's not accurate. I was actually, this is too much information, John, but I was the most improved player.
That's what it was.
Yes, which I continue to always joke that is the award that they give to the, it's really the, hey, you really sucked when you got here, and now you're okay award.
Which is
pretty much how my football career went at Princeton.
It's the guy who can take a beating and keeps coming back for
just
more.
Gets pummeled and just refuses to quit. Yeah, it's another way of looking at it, I suppose.
Thanks, Tom Bevin. Real Clear right. Politics. See you, man.
You bet. Always get what you want. But if you try sometime, it's just my fine.
Before we say goodbye to you, the listener, can I remind you of something? The Chicago Way podcast is a vibrant thing, not just because I'm involved in it or Jeff is involved in it. It's vibrant because you're involved in it. You're the one who's making it go. You made the last several podcasts skyrocket here at WGN Plus, and we'd like to continue doing that. We need your help. Not asking you for money. I'm not a politician asking you for money. All right? Go to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you find us. Subscribe free. If you go to iTunes, you can write us a review like, the Chicago Way podcast is the best bleeping thing ever, or whatever you want to say, just as long as it's 5 stars, okay? Because the industry watches those stars. That's important to keep it going because why? I don't know. Are you going to get Christian McQuarrie, Ted Dabrowski, Andrew McCarthy, Molly Hemingway? Are you going to hear them in a long-form interview without commercial interruption every 5 seconds anywhere else? No, you're not. Share it with your friends. Tell them about it. Share it on social media. Get it out there because, you know, we're doing this for you. Please subscribe. Tell your friends. Say, you know what? I just listened to Cass on the Chicago Way podcast. Man, was that good. That guy's brilliant. Or something else like it. I'll leave the wording up to you. For Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, founder and publisher of that great internet site. For Jeff Carlin, WGN executive producer of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis and co-host here every week. And without him, there is no podcast. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and member of its editorial board. I really need you to find the Chicago Way wherever you find it. Subscribe for free. We do it for you. So see you next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.